and you didn't get it yet, it is up here in the corner. Hopefully everyone can find a comfortable seat where you'll be able to both see and hear what you need to today. For those of you who don't know me, I am Karen Mowry with the PUC. Also at the staff tables with me today are Shane Rooney from the Law Bureau, Tom Charles from the Office of Communications, Wayne Williams from the Director of the Bureau of SEEP, Chuck Kovich from the Bureau of SEEP, and Cal Burge. And I will introduce the panelists in just a minute. A couple housekeeping matters before we get started. Our audio system in this room malfunctioned earlier this week. We were not able to get it repaired in time, but we were able to get a temporary fix with a portable system that we hope will work. Just to make sure that everyone can hear anything that is said, we ask that if you do at any point wish to ask a question or make a comment, that you come up to the podium and speak directly into the microphone. That's especially important because we are posting audio of this meeting on the website later today. As for the presentations that we've received from the panelists, with the time and the scrambling this week to pull the meeting together, we did not get those posted. Many of them came in yesterday, which was actually on time. That's what we asked them to do. But we will be posting those later today or early Monday, so those will be available for you to view. So today, just encourage you to sit back and listen to what they have to say. And if you have specific questions, we hope to have an opportunity to give you that chance to ask them. I think everyone here knows why we're here today, but just very briefly, as you know, this demand-side response working group was reconvened in the fall by the PUC. We have a specific charge to go back to the PUC with specific recommendations for what kind of demand-side response programs, energy efficiency programs, consumer ed campaigns, or any advanced metering infrastructure should be implemented and deployed, and on what time frame. If the working group itself is not able to reach a consensus on those issues, staff is charged with making those recommendations to the commission. We have focused the last couple of months and are going to continue over the next several weeks gathering the information that we need to provide the commissioners with an informed recommendation. We want them to be able to have all of the information that's available and relevant to these issues so that they can make the decision, hopefully later in the spring, as to what kind of policies they want to implement and how they want these issues to be handled going forward. With that, I will introduce the panelists for this first session. The first group are going to be focusing on advanced metering infrastructure. They're going to go in a little different order than you see them on the agenda, and I will just introduce all of them now, and then they can go ahead. The first speaker of this group will be Bernie Budzinowski. He's with PPL Electric Utilities, but is here today in his role with the Automated Meter Reading Association. And he'll be talking generally about the operational benefits of deployed AMR and AMI infrastructure. The next speaker will be Dave Glenwright, who is with the AMI team of PICO Energy. He'll be talking about the successful deployment of an AMI-enabled network. The next speaker will be Steve Carrico. He's with Lee Lake Consulting, but is here today in his role with the automatic metering and demand response. And he'll be talking some about the experiences in Wisconsin and elsewhere regarding AMI installation. The last speaker in this group will be Jeremy Tyree, who's with Cellnet Technology. He's involved with advanced infrastructure, a wireless fixed data communication network for automated solutions such as advanced metering. We are it's unfortunately the next person on the agenda who is supposed to start at 10:15, Mike Winka from the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, has just informed me last evening that he was not going to be able to travel to be with us today, and I also think he's not available to participate telephonically. So that gives us a little bit of leeway with this group. If we go a little bit past 10:15, that won't be a problem. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bernie, and
thank you, Karen.
We'll go from there. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Bernie Bejanowski, and I'm here this morning representing the Automatic Meter Reading Association. Although, as Karen suggested, in the spirit of full disclosure, I'm a full-time employee of PPL Electric Utilities in Allentown, where I serve as its director of AMI programs. Here to talk a little bit today about the operational benefits and economic benefits of AMI infrastructure. The organization I'm representing, AMRA, is a nonprofit organization that's 20 years old, whose role and purpose is to educate, inform, and promote technologies and business systems that provide remote access to utility consumption data. The founders came from various sectors of the metering community, including utilities, manufacturers, vendors, consultants. Membership of about 1,200, and some of the companies in addition to PPL that are represented, you can see on the screen, include PG&E as Pacific Gas and Electric, WPS, formerly Wisconsin Public Service, NU Northeast Utilities in mid-southern Connecticut, Southern Company, Southern California Electric, and some major solution providers, Itron, DCSI, and Cellnet. And the group's purpose is to try and foster a favorable business regulatory climate in which the companies can meet their business objectives. My purpose today here is to describe the operational benefits, the demonstrated benefits, excuse me, of operational systems, and in so doing, providing a context for the working group's further deliberations. Like much of the rest of the world, this industry is undergoing a considerable amount of change in terms of technology, in terms of terminology, and it's often helpful to think of this technology space in one of two groups of solutions. The first group is characterized by mobile solutions, mobile technology. Its principal characteristic, as distinguished from the second group, which are fixed networks, is that it's a very economical system. There is no fixed network communication between the metering endpoint and the receiver, and the benefits tend to be typically related around what we call revenue cycle. You can meet your lower your meter reading costs, more effective in reading meters to the degree that you're not delivering estimated bills. There are certain hit to customer satisfaction. So they're economical. They're also fairly widely implemented throughout this country. Mobile systems, and those meters are read by simply someone with a transmitter, either walking or driving by the meter on some periodic frequency, typically once a month. Mobile systems are distinguished from fixed network. Fixed network systems tend to be more expensive because you've got to build a communication platform between the metering endpoint and the back end of the system where the data is collected. And that tends to make them more expensive, but it typically provides higher functionality. So instead of the meter, as in mobile systems, just sending data to a transmitting data to a receiver, a fixed network system provides two-way communication between the metering endpoint and the head end of the system. And therein lies some fairly significant operational benefits. The system's characterized by two-way communication. The meter sends signals, but you can also send commands to the meter, talk to the meter, if you will. And it's different from mobile systems in that fixed network systems have the capability of bringing back more granular or interval data on a daily basis. The communications platform vary. They can be radio frequency, often cellular wireless, or they can be power line, in which the signals between the meter and the head end of the system actually travel over the current or fields generated by the current on the power line. They can also be BPL or telephone lines. Anyone who's somewhat familiar with this space probably have seen two different terms that are also cause a little bit of confusion. AMR versus AMI. Historically, AMR was the more generic term that included both mobile systems and fixed network system. It referred to any system that brought back energy consumption data over a technology. Increasingly, AMR is being used to categorize mobile systems to distinguish them from AMI solutions, advanced metering infrastructure, which are often characterized by more sophisticated electronic solid-state meters, a fixed platform, fixed telecommunication network, and a back-end system that allows you to capture, store, and manage the data and use it in applications beyond billing. And we'll chat a little bit about that. So what's happening in this space? In 1995, there were about 9 million units. 11 years later, in 2007, the numbers grew to 87 million, almost an 800% increase. And in just a few more years, it's predicted that that figure will more than double again. And this would include meters that serve electric, gas, as well as water customers. So significant amount of growth in the area. Who's putting these things in and who owns them? This is a slide that depicts just the electric part of the business. There are about 100 million electric meters in the country. About 28%, about 26, 27 million are under owned by investor-owned utilities. That's the column on the far right. In the middle are electric cooperatives. They tend to be fairly significant users of AMR. AMI, about almost half of their 16, 17 million members have some form of automated solution. Publicly owned utilities, about 19% of their 19 million customers have some type of AMI solution. Among those groups, what are they putting in? By far, a radio frequency solution, and this is again back to electric customers, about 70 million meters are radio frequency solutions, most of those mobile systems, followed by power line communication technology, about 11.6 million, and smaller amounts of phone and broadband solutions. Okay, so much for the industry and the technology and terminology. So why do utilities use this technology? Many of the benefits, as I suggested earlier, have to do with revenue cycle. By automating your meter reads, you have an opportunity to reduce your monthly meter reading costs. Because most of these systems significantly reduce or virtually eliminate estimated bills, which generate a lot of calls to utilities, you have an opportunity to reduce costs in your call center. If you don't get calls around estimated bills anymore because you're not generating estimated bills, you have an opportunity to reduce your costs there. Special read cost reduction. When you get an estimated bill, or when a customer calls because they have concerns about their high bill, often a resolution is to send someone out, a service person, reread that meter and rebill that customer on a new read. Tends to be a very expensive process. When you have an automated system in, particularly a fixed network system that is bringing back interval data, you have a reads for every single day. You eliminate the need to send out service personnel. Benefits there. On sophisticated types of meters, there are all some business and sometimes regulatory requirements to go out and check proper installation to make sure that the meters are properly registered and installed. Fixed network system offers some opportunities to reduce costs there as well. And in the area of theft detection, systems typically are smart enough to send a signal back and say, hey, someone's fooling around with me, someone's fooling around with my dials, or someone's trying to otherwise tamper with me. Aside from economic benefits, systems offer operational benefits around billing processes and compliance performance. And many utilities, in addition to putting them in as a tactical platform to help reduce their current costs, also are looking at fixed network systems as a strategic platform that offer opportunities around time of use rates, which this group is interested in, and improving the accuracy of forecasting, settlement, and also the possibility of providing information directly to consumers about their energy usage. You can do all of that through an advanced system, provided you're willing to invest in it. That one should not be blank. And all that was... Oh, there we are. So all this says is that... access represents value, and this one cost. And this says that for mobile-type systems, which tend to be more economical, but you get less business functionality. As you invest more in the system and systems that you install and go to an advanced metering infrastructure, you have an opportunity to gain more value. And we'll chat a little bit more about how you gain that value with these systems. Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about utilities that have deployed these systems. And the company that I work for, PPL, completed the deployment of a fixed network power line carrier solution, power line communication solution, to all of our 1.4 million customers. As a result, we were able to eliminate all of our meter readers and the supervisory positions associated with them. And in 2005 dollars, I think we're saving about $16 million in payroll, as well as the associated vehicle and overhead costs. WPS, formerly Wisconsin Public Service, put in a similar solution, serving smaller number of customers. How many, Steve, at WPS?
750,000.
About 750,000 customers. You see similar types of benefits corresponding with what PPL experienced in terms of reduced meter reading costs. I talked about service personnel and their function because you can eliminate many of those trips. We saw annual savings of about $4.3 million, resulting from the elimination of about 46 positions. I understand the WPS had benefits of to the extent of around 10 service positions. KCPL, Kansas City Power and Light, which has a fixed network radio frequency solution. They transmit between the meter and the back end of the system over the radio spectrum, eliminated about 150 trips associated with an outread. So what's an outread? You call up and say, I'm moving next week from my apartment or my home. I want a final bill. Many cases, utilities have to send someone out to get an outread in order to bill you. If you have automatic communication with the meter, you can get that read without sending someone else. UI, United Illuminating, a relatively small electric company in southern Connecticut, about 350,000 customers, has a fixed network system. It's radio frequency. This is an example of the ability of sending out information to the meter, talking to it, and in effect changing its functionality, or at least its operating parameters. And UI saved at least $1 million in just one weekend by being able remotely programming their meters to support time of use rates. Most of all of those benefits I just talked about on the revenue cycle were associated with fixed network systems. Northeast Utilities, put in a mobile system, and you can see that there are corresponding benefits around reduction in meter reading costs. So they started in the early 90s. They finished in 99. As they increased the number of installs, their meter reading FTEs, the number of people required to support meter reading, dropped correspondingly, as well as the percent of their meters unread. So automation resulted in reduced costs and improved processes for them. Talked about call center benefits, talked about the impact of estimates on customers. They don't like estimates. They'll call you. They'll try to get out and give them an actual read. When you eliminate those estimated bills, and we read about, not last year, we read about 99.8% of all the accounts that were up for billing in the course of the year, so a 0.2% estimate. When you perform at that level, you eliminate a lot of calls around estimated bills. You're able to gain some savings in your call centers. It's suggested up there. For us, it was about $400,000 annually. WPS, similar similar process, saw about $100,000 annually. A system also, in addition to economic benefits as a call center, allows you some operational benefits around billing. Now, all that slide says is any billing system for utility does basically one thing. It gets some usage, it applies it to a rate, and it issues a bill. Sometimes a billing system gets usage and says, this doesn't look good. I don't believe it. Someone better take a look at it. And it kicks it out and results in a piece of manual work. Someone has to pick up a piece of paper or look at an electronic memo and say, why did this count not bill? How do I fix it? At PP&L, we call them WFMs, workforce memos or workforce managers. And you can't read that in the back, but it says that in 2003, before we deployed our system, we had our billing system kicked out about 40,000 pieces of manual work a year. 40,000 pieces of paper that someone had to pick up and fix something. A lot of those WFMs, if not most of them, are driven by bad reads. The chart shows that in 2005, we reduced that amount of work by about two-thirds. And in 2006, we went to a steady range of about 16,000 to 17,000 memos a year compared to 40,000. Huge amount of reduction in billing backlog that freed some folks up to do other things at the call center. WPS says around says around this process we save about $250,000 a year, and although we haven't monetized this yet, we figure our savings are at least that much. When you don't serve customers well, they have recourse. They can go to the regulators. Most utilities that I've worked with, that I'm familiar with, are very concerned about how well they serve their customers. And in our company, and I imagine others, one criteria was how many complaints went to the PUC for disposition and processing. The lines here illustrate the trend. The chart starts in 2004 and says in 2004, which is the year we finished our AMI system, we had about 2,000 informal complaints to the PUC. The next year they dropped to 1,229, and in 2006 we ended with 875 complaints, more than a 50-cent reduction. Most of those, many of those informal complaints are as a result of high bills. If you don't satisfy a customer with their concerns about high bill, often results of the call to PUC. The fact that AMI provides you with much more data to deal with the customer and help resolve those complaints better, with the resulting outcome that you're not dealing with these gentlemen as much. So we can go to the next slide. Now, most folks here from Pennsylvania? How many are not from Pennsylvania? Well, this is a picture of what it's like to live in Pennsylvania. It's very pleasant, if not bucolic. This actually is a home of one of our customers. Efficient home, totally electric, swimming pool, a hot tub, and then, you know, a good customer in terms of using electric technology efficiently. However, totally serendipitously, one of the folks working in our revenue protection or theft detection shop noticed something about the usage on this account. And by the way, it wasn't this home. It was in this neighborhood, but it wasn't this particular home. It was a home very much like it. In the interest of confidentiality, that's not the real home. But this is the real information on the account, and you can't see those numbers. It wouldn't mean anything to you. But what this chart represents is the daily usage of that home for a particular period in February or early part of 2005. And these yellow bands you see going across that customer's record highlight periods when the daily usage mysteriously went to zero. It stayed at zero for a couple days, and all of a sudden the meters start working again, and the usage went back to normal. This particular employee was wondering, how could that happen? How could a meter die, revive itself, and do that at some intervals? Well, here's what was going on at the meter of this customer's house, if we could have the next slide. This is the base of the meter. These wires belong here. This one doesn't. It came in, someone installed a lamp wire to potential clips on the meter that allowed you to operate your meter like a table lamp. You could shut it on and off while still maintaining power to your home. So this customer was able to shut off their energy usage during the weekends when everyone was home, turn it back on again on a Monday, and on a monthly billing level, the usage looked pattern, at least from a patterns perspective, looked fairly normal, but on a daily basis, something was going on. What happened as a result of this strong evidence of energy diversion, on this example, we had a recovery from that customer of $2,900. Now, what does that mean as in terms of what the potential is for using this type of data to help recover cases like this? No one really knows how much is being diverted or stolen from them, but industry estimates suggest that somewhere between 1 and 3%. Even if you assume that PPL customers are relatively honest and we're down at the 1% level, if you kind of apply that return to our revenue stream, it's a potential of about $40 million annually recover. Even if we're very, very honest and assume we're only a quarter of 1%, we're still talking about a $10 million potential. I'm going to skip ahead to the next slide. Many utilities who have deployed AMI or fixed network system have seen or have used the ability to communicate directly with the customer in such a way as to manage outages more efficiently. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. My colleague on the panel, Mr. Glenwright from, who did you say you worked for?
the one just a little bit south of you.
PECO,
there you go.
Actually has some more information. I just want to make two points. If all of us lived in a neighborhood and our lights went off, some of us, if not most of us, would call the utility. Utility would get those calls. All utilities have systems which take in those calls, analyze them, and can actually predict with pretty good accuracy, not only where the location of the outage, but what devices on the electric feeder are involved in those outages. That same system will issue or dispatch an order to crews to go out and fix what's wrong. So in our case, if we had several transformers that were out or had to be refused, crews would be dispatched to go out and do the work, refuse those transformers. When they are done, they would call back to the dispatcher. They would say, that work is finished, close out the job, those customers should be in, dispatch the next job to us. And that's a base in a, at a 50,000-foot level how utilities manage storms. All of you may be back in power in that process or not. In some cases, there could be other reasons why you're out, like you may, in addition to the transformer, that same being out, that same storm may have brought down a tree on your service lateral. So the crews don't know that. They've just fixed the outage that was predicted to them and move on. And then you're left wondering, seeing the crews leave the area, you're still out of power. You call the dispatcher and say, hey, your guys were just here, I'm still out of power. Dispatcher tries to get them back. Maybe the dispatcher is successful or not. But in the meantime, you're pretty frustrated until a crew can get back. With a automated metering infrastructure, process works a little differently. When that crews come call back in and say, we're done with the work, the dispatcher can communicate with every single meter in the neighborhood served by those transformers. If the system shows all the meters are communicating, he knows all the customers back in, the crews can be released. If not, the crews are held, sent to the location of the meters that are out, and you replicate that process enough and result in economic savings as well as improved performance on your average length of time to have customers out. PECO has done some of the best work I've seen in terms of understanding how that process helps them perform better during storms. And Dave, I think you're going to cover that in some detail, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And finally, what a lot of folks are interested in here, time of use rates. AMI, AMR, even though it's getting a lot of visibility lately, the infrastructure to support time of use rates has been around quite a while. You have sophisticated meters bringing back data, typically over telephone lines, and you support time of use rates for customers. Historically, given this type of solution, because it tends to be a relatively expensive solution, has been limited to customer classes that were able to take advantage of time of use rates, typically large industrials or large commercial. Fixed network systems, however, allow everyone to take advantage of time variant rates because of the ability of these systems to bring back interval data for all of its customers. Today, for example, PPL Electric Utilities is bringing back hourly data for all of its 1.4 million customers. This is a slide prepared based on data from a consulting firm doing work in this space, and basically it shows that there's a lot of interest in regulators in supporting time of use rates. The question is at what cost and who will benefit from these rates. But one dramatic example of what some benefits are, Puget Sound Energy, which has an AMI infrastructure, fixed network radio frequency, serving all of its customers, conducted in the early 2000 timeframe a pilot for 300,000 residential customers. The results were, to me, quite significant, quite dramatic. A 5-6% shift of energy usage from peak periods to non-peak periods, in addition to a 1% conservation effect and a capacity savings of 30 to 40 megawatts. So in conclusion, folks who have done this, people like PPL Electric Utility, PICO Exelon, Wisconsin Public Service, and a number of others throughout the country, typically these systems have met the expectations. They were supposed to do, they were doing what they were intended to do in terms of functionality. The one good thing about even large AMI implementations is they tend not to be disruptive to customers. Folks, many utilities who've deployed other types of systems, like billing systems for their customers, often seeing that large projects, large infrastructure projects, can often disrupt service to customers. Typically, this hasn't been the case with AMI implementations. And finally, and I've made this point several times in the course of the presentation, the range of benefits on these types of systems are not only tactical in terms of reducing your day-to-day costs, but offer a strategic platform to leverage the information from these systems for applications beyond billing. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. We'll move on through all the four panelists, and then to the extent there's time at the end, we'll take questions from all of you. So next up is Dave Glenwright.
Good morning. I'm Dave Glenwright. I've been asked to represent PICO Energy here to speak about our automated meter reading system, some of the advances that we've made with this system from a strategic perspective, which we call kind of day two benefits, and also some of the limitations of the system and future direction that we're headed to fully leverage the capability of the data that we get from this automated meter reading system. Just to give you a little bit of background on PICO, we have a 2,400 square mile service area. We serve Philadelphia and southeastern PA, 1.7 million electric customers, about 500,000 gas customers, and we have a fully deployed automated meter reading system. It's a radio frequency system. It's first generation CellNet technology was the solution that we chose. We have 2.2 million meters on that network and about 3,000 large C&I customers that are currently on MV90 and Metrotech. MV90 is for the large electric customers. Metrotech we use for large gas customers. If you look at PICO's journey into AMR, it's actually been quite some time since we started. Now, back in 93 time frame, it was really investigate, find out what the technology was at that particular time in the marketplace. And also we were looking at different functions that we wanted to outsource. And we actually outsourced our meter reading at that time to a contracted service run by VSI. In the 99 time frame, or through that period, well, I think we're... Want to back up a slide there, please. Okay, must be missing this slide. In the 99 time frame, let me just talk through this slide that I have here, and then I'll get to this slide on the screen. But we really went through developing a business case and also contracting. We signed a contract with CellNet in 99. They were part of the Schlumberger company at that particular time when we had put that contract in place. And we completed our deployment in 42 months. So somewhere in the end of 2003, we had a pretty much fully deployed network on the system, which we were looking at, this type of network structure that we put in, where we have a local area network, a wide area network, system control center, and then the interface with our with PICO and Exelon's applications, such as the billing system and other areas. If you look at the basic, if you look down at the lower right on the local area network, the devices on the pole, they're called microcell controllers, or MCC is the acronym that we use for that. Our MCCs communicate with our meters. It's actually the meters communicate up to the MCC. So some people call that a one-way network because our meters are only capable of communicating up. The MCC can't communicate down. So we do have what we call a one-way network. But we can always get information out of the MCC. So when we talk about some of the advances that we've made to extract data like real-time information, when we ping a meter, we're actually pinging the MCC to determine the last time that we've received information from that particular meter. The MCC then communicates up through the cell master. There, we have 91 of these cell masters throughout the system, and then that information gets uploaded to the National Operations Center that CellNet operates for us. They host our data and then transfer that information that we purchase off of them to us. If you pop to the next slide, we'll talk a little bit about the network components. This gives you a little better visual as to what they look like and the quantity of items that we have out there. So, for example, the MCCs, we have approximately 8,300 MCCs, which are typically hung on a pole or a street light throughout the service area. And then 91 cell masters, those cell masters are typically at the substation level or within, you know, somewhere where we can access a LAN-type connection. On the next slide, we'll talk a little bit about the relationship with CellNet. We have a 15-year fee-for-service performance contract with CellNet. They own and operate the AMR system. All of the network components are CellNets, and they have full responsibility for maintaining them. So the microcell controllers, the cell masters, the NOC, they have full responsibility for maintaining that equipment and operating that equipment. They own approximately 1 million of our meters, and these are the Centron, which are residential solid-state meters, and they own all of the technology that's on any of the retrofitted meters. So the technology being basically the module which communicates up through the network. We purchase meter reads and other information from CellNet, and I'll get into specifics as to the type of information that we purchase from them. But we always retain ownership of all of our customer data. And we have maintenance contracts in place between CellNet and PICO on who's responsible for what aspect of the maintenance. But CellNet does have workforce within our service area that they actually go out and maintain meters and interact with customers as well as our own crews. One of the reasons why we structured the agreement the way that we did was we were in a situation where we did not want to expend a whole lot of capital. So we were looking to come up with a creative agreement. We came up with this outsourced or fee-for-service type agreement. The AMR data that we do deliver, that is delivered to us for the fixed network, we do have electric meters, a basic service level, where we're getting daily readings and on-demand readings. And then we also have an enhanced service level where we can get demand, reactive energy, interval, and time of use. We get various flags and alarms. You know, Bernie spoke about, you know, some of the theft-type flags that you might get if someone pulls a meter and turns it upside down. You get a reverse rotation type flag that comes in. If one of our modules is running low, or the gas modules have a battery in them, if the battery's running low, we get a flag or an alarm saying, hey, we have a low battery, need to get out there and replace the battery. So we get various flags and alarms, and then we get real-time outage and restoration information. So if we have a power outage, that meter will send a last gasp, what we call a last gasp signal. It's its last breath of air, and it's saying, I am out of power. You know, come investigate me, but I'm out of power. When that meter gets, when that service gets restored, we also get a what we call a power up or a restoration message as well that tells us, hey, that power's been restored to that particular customer. So we're finally at a point where I think we're meeting customer expectations, because customers expect us to know when their power's out. We still do very much rely on customers to call us and tell us, because the data that we receive is not 100%, but it's enough that we've been able to work that into our outage algorithms to really extract benefit for the company. And I'm going to focus on that in just a few minutes. We also, for the gas meters, we get daily readings. We get various flags and alarms there as well. And we do have a very small population of meters that are not part of the fixed network. These are in very rural areas, but we have about 18,000 meters that we're just collecting monthly readings on, because they're just kind of a drive-by area. Bernie covered many of these business benefits of AMR, but let me just kind of frame it from the way that we look at things. So at PECO and Exelon, we always look at things on a balanced perspective. We're not just looking at all financial gain. So we kind of have a balanced scorecard, which we actually call our management model, and we have different key focus areas that we look for. So anytime we evaluate a technology or a project, we're always trying to relate it back to those specific business areas that we're going to extract value from. So from a customer perspective, some of the benefits that AMR delivers is we're really minimizing inconvenience of customers. We're all here today. We're not at home letting a meter reader in our house, right? There's many homes in our service area that no one is home during the day. It's a real inconvenience to go out and manually read meters. And then even some of those customers that are home, they refuse you access into the property to read your meter. So we are minimizing the inconvenience to those customers that have those difficult to read meters. We are reducing the number of estimated bills, and I think Bernie showed that very well from their system, which showed the WOFMs coming down substantially as they implemented their AMR system. We have similar experience at PECO as well. We've improved our ability to answer questions on the first call with more information at our CSRs, or the service representatives have more information in front of them. They're able to answer customers' questions. They have daily information in front of them. Customer calls in and says, my usage is high, I don't understand it, what's going on? Our customer service rep can look at the information on their screen. They said, well, I see a spike on the weekend of such and such, with something going on that weekend. And it might spur something in the customer's mind to say, yes, I had a party that weekend. So, yeah, we had the hot tub on. Thank you very much. No need to send an investigator out to look at my meter. I'm satisfied with your response. And we're in that light, we're able to provide more energy usage information and improve the overall customer satisfaction. In the financial management area, we're improving our meter to cash cycle. We did implement a continuous service, which we'll call that soft shutoff. If we go out, if a customer's moving in and moving out, we don't have a need for really going out and physically shutting off the meter in the service and getting a read. We can do that automatically. We can monitor the usage to see if a new customer moves in without calling and applying for service. We have opportunities to increase our revenue. We did have a population of slow meters out there. Replacing 2.2 million meters, you're basically covering all of your meter population, so you're taking care of some maintenance issues that are out there. We've been able to improve our power factor measurement, reduce lost revenue from theft, And then on the operational side, you know, read rate and accuracy, our read rate performance last year overall was 99.01%, or 99.1%, I'm sorry. So it was very, very high. Reducing our CADI, which is a, index for measuring average customer interruptions. We have improved productivity of our field forces. We've reduced our customer call volumes. We've reduced safety instances. We don't have meter readers on the street. We don't have all those vehicles that could potentially become involved in an accident. So we've reduced our safety incidences tremendously, which is very important for a company like PICO. We pride ourselves on a very safe organization, and this is another example of how we do that. The items in blue here around increase asset utilization, improve the ability to design the electric distribution network, and identify precursors to reliability events. These are things that we're exploring now, and I'll get into them in a little bit, but that's why they're in blue. Everything in green there are things that we have accomplished. We have seen those benefits within our organization. The outage management process I want to focus in on now. So our outage management process now with the AMR system, we do process last gasp information. So that's something that's new where we have these AMR initiated events. So if we get a last gasp message from a meter, we are entering that into our outage management system as if it was a customer call. And we're using that information to say, hey, we have a problem here. There's a single power outage. We have a host of filters on that information to try to make sure that we're getting reliable information in there. But we create this outage record. It goes into the outage management system. We also feed in different SCADA data into that outage management system. Then we have a host of bolt-on tools that we've developed to really help support the outage features, where we can do single pings, we can do automatic processing of pings, which are batch pinging. We have tools that will automatically roll an event up if we find that there's a single outage and we go out and selectively do a sample of other customers on that transformer. We'll roll that event up to a transformer event, and therefore we understand that, hey, we have a different skill set that works on transformers versus single customer services, and we'll dispatch the right crew out to the job to do it right the first time. And then on the tail end, we also get the restoration information, which really helps us at the end of an event or storm in really validating, you know, which customers came back and at what time they came back on. So it really helps the full integrity of the data and in reporting our CADI numbers. Let me go through an outage example here. So this is a circuit, kind of a typical underground residential development. The box lines here with the numbers next to them. These are distribution, these are transformers. So, and the up here is a few. But there's 86 customers on this particular circuit. If you could just kind of walk through it one by one, it's going to kind of pop up. So it's very hard to see that, but that says call number one, that little arrow that's pointed there. So what happened on this particular case was, this is an outage example with no AMR. But we had a call come in at 11:27 telling us, hey, customer ABC is out of power. If you can walk through that. We got additional calls coming in. Call number two. Call number three comes in. Call number four comes in. You know, you can see the time incrementing here. As of right now, we're thinking that these are just four individual outages. and we're not correlating things that it could be a higher event. Call number 5 comes in. Call number 6. Call 7. At call number 7, which is at 11:43, we finally figure out through the logic of the outage management system, we got multiple customers on the same transformer, therefore this is a transformer event. So it rolls up to a transformer. Continuing to go through that, call number 8 comes in, call number 9. Now we have basically at 11:49 two transformers that are out. Now we roll that up through the logic of the outage management system to say this is no longer a single transformer event, it's a fuse event. So now we know to send someone out to that fuse to go check the fuse. That would be their first stop. And we know which crew to send out there because we have different skilled technicians. If you look at an outage example with AMR, you have call number 1 that comes in at 11:27. So a very diligent customer calls in, says, hey, my power's out. The next signal that comes in is a last gasp signal. The third signal that comes in is a last gasp. The fourth that comes in is a last gasp as well. And now we've recognized that, you know, we have an event that's greater than, if you go one more, we have an event that was greater than just a single outages. So the next call comes in, that's call number 2. Call number 3 comes in. Call number 4, or last gas message comes in, and we now identified it as a transformer event and a fuse event. But look at the time. The event time is 11:34. So all that information just came in 15 minutes sooner. We can dispatch that and assess what the condition is on our system 15 minutes sooner for 86 customers. It's a very small impact on Katie, but if you roll that up on a day-by-day basis where the system is operating in the background, you know, we are able to identify outages, identify the type of outage quicker, and able to get the right crew out to that particular site. So some of the overall benefits that we've seen with this outage management integration with the AMR data is really we've been able to have quicker response due to the last gasp. We've had a more efficient use of our field crews. We've been able to validate power restoration times using daily reports. We've actually documented that we reduced our customer average interruption rate by 5.5 minutes in 2005. So it would have been 5.5 minutes more if we didn't have this particular system in place in 2005. And if you look at, you know, the effectiveness of it over the years, you know, the outages that we've canceled in 2006, we canceled 11,600 outages. That's 11,600 jobs that we didn't send someone out on the street on. So that means the customers that are truly out of power, we can get to them and restore them much quicker. The outages escalated. There's 4,500 jobs that we've escalated using this tool in 06. And then just the volume of different messages that we've used and that have come in to help us assess the performance of the outage system. I'm going to skip over to some of the challenges now. So some of the challenges that we have with our AMR system. We basically have a dumb meter smart network design. So when you're putting in 2.2 million endpoints, you want the lowest cost possible at the endpoint. And you want to invest your money in all the smarts of the network at the network level. So at the MCC and the cell master is where all the intelligence is built. The meters basically just are out there pulsing information. So an electric meter just pulsing information every 5 minutes up to the network. The network calculates the demand. It aggregates interval data. The network receives 9 readings, the 9 past readings every 5 minutes. So it's just pulsing that information in and out. Meters do not have any storage capability per se. They have about 45 minutes of storage capability in the particular meter. The network's designed to deliver daily reads. So if we were to collect a more TOU information or more information on interval reads, it requires a denser network. So you have to build this network out so you can collect the additional data that you need to kind of feed your various systems. Contract performance standards. We have different performance standards for TOU and interval. And, those standards currently today are set at about 98% on the aggregate, which means that we're typically getting at least 98% of the interval data. So, there's some validation estimation routines to fill in the 2% of intervals that you're missing. And then the network time sync on the hour is plus or minus 75 seconds. From a pricing or cost perspective, we do pay more information. The more information that we request, the higher the fee is. So for a daily read, it's a set fee. For interval data, it's a higher fee to get that information because it's a higher cost to collect it. And then from a PICO IT system, we have various limitations within our billing systems, such as we may require a meter data management system. The more information, the more information you're trying to calculate from a bill perspective, if you were to go hourly or TOU, you're slowing down your billing engine. You're creating large amounts of data that you now have to store. So these are all things that we need to look at as we move forward with any type of interval, load profile, TOU type systems or rates. So where are the opportunities that we have? At PICO, one of the things that we're always exploring is, different technologies and the use of that technology. We did have a pilot that I just want to talk briefly about. It was a GoodWatts pilot. GoodWatts is a smart thermostat type program with load control devices. The technology was using a company called Invensys. This was a partnership that we had with Comcast. Comcast was very interested in seeing how they could use their broadband network into the customer's homes to control these various devices within the customer's home. And we were very interested in seeing how, what the price points were, as well as how we could maybe shave some peak or move some peak. And that was our participation in this. We did discontinue that pilot in 2005. We discontinued it primarily because, first of all, Comcast got the information that they were looking for. I think we got the information we were looking for. Invensys also is no longer marketing that particular technology, so they weren't supporting it anymore. And we did discover several things with that pilot. One of the things we discovered was, first of all, it was a high cost to implement that particular solution. And there was also very little benefit from, a demand perspective on that particular piece. The potential opportunities that we have that we're still looking at, we are looking at distribution equipment load management. We're looking to, basically look at our transformer loading, determine where we might be overloading transformers using the AMR data, redesigning some of that system. We're looking at information that we get off of meters. Some meters tell us things that we're not really sure what it's telling us. We might get frequent outage information off of a particular meter. And these are kind of just momentary type interruptions. And that's really telling us that, hey, there might be something going on with the service cable. There might be something going on with tree trimming. Might have to get out there and do some tree trimming. But there's various signals that that's telling us. And we're looking at using that AMR information to predict when we may actually have an outage. We're also looking at smart networks. We see this convergence of AMR and distribution automation. We're evaluating future rate offerings and looking at different packages to enhance the revenue integrity for some of the larger commercial customers. So overall, you know, in conclusion, PECO's been very progressive in trying to use the information that we have from our AMR system and really leverage that technology. And we are committed to extracting as much value as we can out of that system to benefit our customers and our business. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. All right, we'll move on to Steve. While Steve is going to the podium, let me just take care of one quick housekeeping matter before the break. If any of you haven't been in the building before, the restrooms are in the worst imaginable place. They're clear. You have to go down the steps to the atrium. You can also take the elevator to the atrium, go clear to the back of the building, then turn right and clear at the other end. So just so you know that for the break.
Okay, good morning. I'm going to be skipping through some things because there is some duplication here, so I'm going to try to move this thing along. I know you all would like to maybe stand up, take a break, whatever. If you do, don't worry about it. Just do it. I wear several hats. I'm going to basically be talking as the past Director of Communications Business Development at Wisconsin Public Service. I'm also involved in AMRA with Bernie, and I retired at the end of our project, and that doesn't mean it was a forced retirement. It was voluntary. And started a little consulting company. What I'd like to talk about this morning is some high-level strategy. I'm going to skip over most of the benefits because you've already heard that, but I do want to kind of give you a feel for what I see the state of the industry is. AMI... to the next one. You know, it was a sophisticated alternative to the meter reader. That's how companies started looking at it. It was like, okay, we're going to replace the meter reader. That was the main objective. Now I believe it's the building block to transform the utility into a competitive and customer-focused company. It's going to provide, what it does is it provides the customer with choice. And back in the deregulation time when we were really moving very quickly and thinking that all residential customers would eventually have choice, you were going to have a way to capture that information on a daily, if not hourly, basis. But it's still going to provide customers with choice, especially when you start looking at some of the new rates that we're going to propose. Customer knowledge. I believe it's what we have to do is know them well and know them individually. So, well, what you need to do is build relationships. And our company was proposing the value proposition was customer intimacy. Now, why do I say that? Well, we're taking this what it used to be. It was a cash register. Somebody walked around, looked at that meter once a month, and wrote a bill out and said, this is what you owe us. But now we've got an information device. You see, we went from 12 touches of the customer. Some are going to daily reads, which is 365, but we went to hourly, and that is 8,760 touches of that customer. So with that information, that can be turned in to that information can be turned into intelligence in the back room. In fact, our CEO said, yes, we will be getting rid of 100 meter readers. But you know what? We're going to be building a new back room, because you need to take that information and turn it into intelligence and then value to the customer, because value is what the customer wants. Simply put, information is power. You all know that. Some people like to hold it, but information is power. This also grows the utility. It allows the utility to grow. And it maintains control of revenue cycle services. AMI is a transformational asset. Now, one of the things that you have to be sensitive to for your utilities is that data integration is the key to success. How you integrate it within the utility is the key. It's important to understand the processes that have to be changed. Our company came up with 25 major processes that we had to change. Now, there's an advantage to that, to the utility and the customer, because you can standardize processes. We had over 30 district offices. And guess what? Every one of them did it differently. And the reason why they did it differently was because that's the way you have to do it here. But that's not the best way to do it. We were able to standardize processes in all of those district offices. Data overload is going to be a challenge. Just think, a customer, you've got 12 data points per year. All of a sudden now you've got 8,760 data points. What are you going to do with all that stuff? That's the key to installing these advanced metering infrastructures, is having a plan as to what you're going to do with the data. It's imperative when companies deploy, it's imperative that whoever's managing the project gets buy-in from all functional areas. You heard my two colleagues talk about some of the savings that they get out of the system. One of the major challenges that companies have is getting the buy-in from all functional areas so that They have the data. Now let's use it. Somebody's got to be managing that to make sure that the operations department is taking this data and looking at their transformer sizing. Because change is going to affect all of these 25 different functional areas. And this just shows that AMI is the system and that has to be integrated. Would you skip to the key issues? Key issues when you're looking at what do I put in? What kind of data do you need? Monthly, daily, hourly, 15 minute. You know, we looked at 15 minute data, but to get there, the expense is just way, way too high. We think there are certain customer classes that need 15 minute data for things like demand, but not the masses. We believe that hourly is where it's at right now. You have to look at geography. Data security is another issue. You really need to think about all of that data, and you need to think about that when you select your technology to make sure that that data is secure. In Wisconsin, we actually deployed a couple of systems. We deployed a power line system, and we deployed a wireless for gas. And I'd like to go to the benefits and have you remember now that wireless for gas. And we laid it over the top of the power line technology to pick up all of our gas customers. Skip to the next one. Okay. I'd like to just point you to the last one there, potential of new revenues. One of the things that we as utilities need to think about is how can we leverage this system once it's in? One of the things that we did was built a partnership with a water utility. They have meter readers that are going out reading meters side by side with our meter readers. When we replaced the system, we worked with a water utility and said, look, why don't you pay for the technology, but we will read that technology through our system and get you a flat file where you can do the billing. And we are still doing it now. It's working. I think this is another area that you really need to look at. Skip to the next one. I want to talk about flexibility to generate new rates. Now, this is what you're all about, right? Rates. What are the customers paying? How are they paying? With all of this data, rate departments are just salivating. I know our guys are at Wisconsin Public Service. In fact, I had a meeting with our rates group about 2 weeks ago prior to a strategic planning session that we had down in Chicago for AMRA. And I wanted to get a feel from them as to what's going on. How are you using this data? Well, One of the things that we have kicked off, and when I say we, I'm kind of working with them now to help them through this maze, but they want to set up a rate whereby you have two different rate schedules during the day. One would be at like 6 cents a kilowatt hour, and the other one would be at 17 cents a kilowatt hour, trying to move that demand, get it moved into a different time period of the day. But along with that rate, they want a third element. And that third element is we want to be able to take your power costs, raise it to 45 cents a kilowatt hour for 150 hours a year. I mean, that would be the max. And they want to do it with residential. Now, that's pretty drastic. I mean, I know what my neighbors are going to say when they come out and propose a rate like that. They've got to be able to show them some value. But just think about that. 45 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, what's the key? How do you manage that? I'll tell you how you have to manage it. It's with communications. Communications are going to be very, very important in the future. You can't just all of a sudden say to that residential customer, you're going to be paying 45 cents a kilowatt hour. You've got to give them some notice. Or you have to come up with things beyond the meter that are going to automatically shut off when the signal is sent. That's why it's very important to have a system, in my estimation, that's two-way. So that you can talk to your customer and your customer can talk back. But think about that rate. If you can take 150 hours a year and bump that price up to that amount, the customer will respond. They will respond. Next two slides, I'd like to just hit key drivers and issues that are facing the market. Why are we doing this? I mean, why are we spending billions of dollars on this technology? Well, there's got to be a reason, and there is. Gas and electric prices are on the rise. Everybody knows that. They're going up. End users are looking for ways to control costs. Large customers have increasingly savvy energy managers. I mean, we have a whole department at Wisconsin Public Service that deals with these energy managers. Energy management costs, and I'm just talking about the people that are employed by companies to manage energy costs, is over $1 billion annually. That's not doing anything but paying salaries of people to manage this. Energy costs and the percentage of total operational costs they represent are on the rise. What does that mean? Well, economically, if you get out of whack with one cost that has to go into your product, and it starts rising, and it's not in other countries, you're not going to be competitive. So we've got to get a handle on it. Next key driver, increased pressure of reliability. Customers expect more today than they did 20 years ago. There's capital budget constraints. You'd better be able to show your company management that if you deploy one of these systems, you will get the payback. There is extreme pressure internally in utilities for the dollar. And as you know, the dollars are limited, so you have to compete. There's very little utility distribution automation. Very little exists today. I believe this is a growth area. You need to use these systems to manage the utilities distribution system. And some utilities really want to optimize that distribution system just like they do on a transmission system. And then you have the Energy Policy Act of 2005. You all know what that is. That's driving the marketplace. These are some of the things that are out there that are supporting the move to AMI. So, in conclusion, AMI is a critical asset to managing the utility of the future.
Thank you, Steve. And now we'll move to Jeremy.
Am I okay there, Karen?
Are you okay?
Time-wise?
Yeah, we're fine because we have till the break at 10:45. I mean, if you end a little sooner, we'll see if there are questions. But I think we'd rather hear what you want to share with us, and that's the main reason we're here today. So you go ahead.
Terrific. Okay, I am a director of utility solutions for Cellnet. What that really means is I have sales for the area from D.C. to Maine and then out to Illinois. Now, I'm going to take off, we've got a lot of hats going here. I'm going to take off my sales hat and represent the industry. And when I say the industry, we talked about the AMRA with Bernie. We have an association with the vendors who also put together a joint effort to be able
Excuse me, Jeremy, could you lift your microphone up a little higher?
How's that?
Or get shorter. Okay, thank you.
Okay, did anybody hear that? Okay, I was just saying that I'm a salesperson who's responsible for Cellnet. Cellnet is an AMI provider. Dave just mentioned, they're one of our customers, but I'm not really here to be able to promote Cellnet as much as I am to talk about AMI in general and the industry and where it's going, and hope I can provide some insight. And I can be fairly brief because there's a bit of overlap here, but I'm going to try to build on, this is going to kill my back, I'm going to try to build on what the other people have already said. So I guess my overriding message to the commission and the working group is that AMI is a technology investment enabler, not a surgical answer to a project. In our minds, it should be looked at similar to wires and pipes and the way that it is, the business case goes, and also incremental revenue recovery. We'll talk about that. But at any rate, we actually canvassed what the commission might want to hear. And can you hear me? I'm going to talk loud from here. Is that okay? Because I had this thing about touching and turning, and I learned that in IBM, and it's a dysfunctional kind of a way to present, but that's the way I do it. Briefly, AMI definitions, and the reason for doing that is not to talk about what Bernie did, but to say that there's levels in our mind of what AMI is all about. And one of the questions that was raised was, what are the different levels of AMI? What are the associated benefits? really short on who's Cellnet, and I want to use that as a platform to congratulate Pennsylvania in general, because Pennsylvania has the most penetrated AMI installations in the country statewide. More endpoints than anybody else and much further along the way than most in the country. It's not great to be a salesperson in that regard, but we're very proud of Pennsylvania. Then talk about an opportunity curve. I was asked to talk about the components of AMI. I'll do that and try to do it in a short way, and then talk about the intelligent grid. Bernie already did this, right? This is AMR is consumption, and we're automating the meter reader function, and it's mostly cost reduction. AMI is two-way communications out to advanced metering, and in my mind, that's a baseline AMI. And what we look at as an advanced AMI is not only going out to the meters, but actually controlling function out either at the meter or beyond the meter, and also addressing distribution automation and SCADA. So there's a tremendous jump in value from what we're discussing here and what I would call advanced. Okay? Quickie on CellNet. We are providers, network providers, as David mentioned, we're RF providers as opposed to power line, which one of our competitors within the state provides to Bernie. It's just another way of doing AMI. We address AMI, SCADA, and DA for all three of those utilities. We're in a growth mode. We are the dominant player right now with 12 million endpoints. What I wanted to say right here is two of the largest implementations in the country, if not three, are here in Pennsylvania. PICO is our largest implementation, although Ameren seems to be trying to catch up. It's my favorite. Not because I live in the service territory there, but they've done some really wonderful things in terms of pushing the envelope, and Dave talked a little bit about outage management. There's a lot of the other things they're doing theft-wise and so forth. So we're growing. We're 150 million, but we do have custodian because of a lot of our managed service business for $25 billion worth of revenue within the utilities industry right now that we manage. But we have a for sale model as well. Go ahead. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the three levels. And I'm going to summarize them because we've kind of been there a little bit with some of the other presentations. But this is level one, which is a walk-by or drive-by system. And you could extend that to be some of the baseline of what you would do with AMR. But if you look at what's going on here, you're reducing labor force, the clerical staff that used to have to take care of that, compressing read-to-bill, more accurate reads, less estimated readings, and then off-cycle reads can be extremely expensive, and that's a big part of the business case. But what does that do for the consumers as opposed to the utility? It's a lot of cost reduction on the utility side. Okay, so there's not a lot of ratepayer benefit in the first one. The second one, where we actually get into a fixed network, we already talked about this a bit. Outage management is huge. I've done business cases with a lot of utilities, and I can take a quote from one that is very familiar to me, which is that the last go-around with an RFI where I was trying to do an enterprise play on AMI, I couldn't do it with a business case, but now what I know with outage management on the electric side, it's a no-brainer. So from a business case point of view, this is huge. From a consumer point of view, it's way huge in terms of being able to get them back up. And as Dave says, there's at PICO, they're now identifying outages where there's actually no calls that come in because people aren't home. Cul-de-sac schools and so forth, where they would be out there. So there's tremendous benefit moving in this direction in the fixed network. But I'm going to not spend a whole lot of time here, but characteristic of this second level is that I am just going out to the meter and I'm getting information, albeit two-way, and I'm taking and using that information. I am not doing a lot of control of things outbound. And when you think about direct response, which is what this group is looking at, you really need to go out and send a signal and then actually do something. A little different than time of use. We can do time of use here. But that is the difference. I'm going to be on the next level actually controlling things, either at the meter, in the house, in the distribution network. Tremendous benefits, yet with the same infrastructure. So just going along here, all this right now, a lot of our customers, like Ameren, is doing this right now, is let me take a snapshot at a peak, and let me see where I am, and let me see if my forecasting tools and all my planning that I'm using estimates or samples make sense. And in so doing, I can forego investment in the distribution network possibly save on the energy side. Not going to go into this at all. I don't know if there's a lot of money there. But over on this side, in terms of customer service, I already talked about the daily profiles. They're tremendous. UI is actually going to put daily profiles out on the network so they can see them online, so they don't have to call. TOU, well, I would just say this in terms of TOU. We're getting a lot of pressure, and I don't see it here so much. I see it up in Connecticut and up in New England. There's been tremendous rate increases in Maryland. It's fostering new rate structures for our customers so that they can be able to save if they can move things around a bit. I'll tell you what the issue is. Maybe not so much here as in other places, is if you try to do... Am I on?
Yeah.
Where's my train of thought? If you try to do it from a consumption level, say, let me get down to 20,000 CCF in gas or whatever the issue is on the electric side, the problem you have is, and able to get all those reads, you really need a fixed network. But if you look at the customers and consumption levels, they're all over the state. So it becomes cost prohibitive to be able to do it that way. That's why I'm saying you need to be able to have an enabling infrastructure so you can implement time of use, everything else, wherever it makes sense, when it makes sense, and the utility ought to be able to turn it on and off remotely. So you get that capability here, and there's a lot of benefits here, but let's move to the next one. I have all the stuff that I had before, only the letters are smaller. Anybody notice? Different color, maybe that helps. The difference between where we were before and where we are now is that in our mind, this same network should satisfy distribution automation. We have SCADA applications that extend out, and all these things that we want to monitor that maybe we can't cost effectively do that now with the technology. But if we could do it with the same network that we use for meter reading, tremendous benefit and leap in terms of value, both for the utility and for the customer. In terms of demand response, same thing. Now, instead of giving people the opportunity to change their rates if they move stuff around, now when we hit a demand peak, we can actually go out and send a signal to the customer, and if the customer says yay, we can take that load off. And tremendous value to the utility, tremendous value to the environment, foregoing generation, that sort of stuff, big benefits. Out here, and we're starting to do this, and California is really moving this right now, is they're putting everything but the kitchen sink under the meter glass. You know, instead of the unsightly collars, now we're going to have physical disconnects. So for the uncollectibles, we'll be able to turn them off and turn them on. For people who have to move around a lot, we can do that. We're betting a lot in our organization that prepayment is going to be big. Although it doesn't seem to be accepted in the States the way it is in Europe, but we think that, you know, with the right marketing, and that will be an advantage for people who have a hard time paying. So if you look at that, it just in general, this is great. This is a super leap. And And what you want to do is look at that as one architecture investment and then provide recovery. The issue that you have with utilities today, if you don't provide incremental recovery, then they have to go and make choices between wires and pipes and an AMR infrastructure. So that's the dilemma that a lot of utilities are running under right now, even though maybe they could make a business case if they don't get recovery for this. I'm going to go right by that. Does this look busy? I'm going to try to make it simple. Somewhere there was an interest in the elements of a network, and I'm going to just show it to you, high level, summarize it, and it should play back nicely against the benefits that I just talked about, because how do you do those things? Endpoint, 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 endpoint. An endpoint is a radio or some other module means to be able to control something. Out in the distribution network, maybe we're looking at reclosure switches in the gas environment and the water environment. We can't do two-way because of battery life, but they don't need it as much anyway anyhow, so that's okay. The meter, the electric meter, however, we're going right down to the meter, and then if it's sitting on the side of the house, which it always seems to be, is that we have the ability to actually go in the house, or we could have an endpoint that's actually a load control device off of the same network. So first component is endpoints. Second component is network hardware, and this could be RF, or it could be power line carrier. And then we have to somehow take the data that we're bringing up here or taking it down and convert it into something that the computers can understand. Over here, we're managing the network. Over here, we're sending billing data to CIS. We're doing outage management, DA. Not a lot of home network, but maybe in the future. And that's basically how it works. I'm going to quickly tell you, I mean, does that make sense? I'm going to quickly tell you what you can do with this. From an endpoint point of view, I can sit there and say, every hour I'm going to send data. We do it every 5 minutes. I'm going to do that every 5 minutes. Or maybe a reclosure is just every once in a while telling you what the status is, and it just transmits up, and that's all it does. Second thing that can happen is I'm going to have an alert. And this is exception management, which is reclosure goes twice or three times or whatever makes sense. If we're gone, I want an alert. Well, by the way, I want it if it happens once, I want an alert. Over here, if we're doing a tamper, I want to be able to see that. Over here, I want to know when I went out, and I want to know when I come back, so that I can squeeze Katie for the customer. So we can do that going up this way. This way, I can come back down and say, before I send a truck out, I want to know if that meter's there, whether it has power. On your demand side, your DR stuff, I want to send a signal down when I want to offload something. So I'm going down, I'm getting information back that says it's okay. Then I'm going to go down and turn something off, and then I want confirmation back. Today, a lot of these programs, you can't get confirmation back. You don't even know whether you did it or not, and you're still providing the same benefit rate to the ratepayer. Okay, so I can go down, I can go up when I want to, or I can do exception management instead of polling all the time. That's what the network looks like. And from a cost perspective, we talked about AMR being very expensive, AMI being very expensive. Most of the money is in the cost of the meter, the installation, it's about 80-85%, and then 15%, maybe 20, depending, is the network. And the meter is getting more and more expensive. The ones out in California they're looking at right now with everything under the glass. Okay. 125 to 180, maybe. Somebody asked a question of relative cost. Okay. I'm almost done. Just in case anybody really needs to take a break. So, what is my message? My message is AMI is an enabler. It's an investment. And this is the big piece right here, is we've got to look at how we cause utilities to make their investments, and do they have to trade off doing enhancements to the network to be able to put something up that would enhance the ratepayers? Or can we give them incremental recovery? Of course, we're going to have the business case and the value to be able to do that, but that should be in the thought process of every commission in my mind. And you can't do intelligent grid without AMI and so forth and so on. My feeling is that what's going to happen, part of it's going to be meter, part of it's going to be capability in the network, is we're going to have one network that does it all. Last page. So you make your investment, and we've seen this at PICO, we've seen this at Ameren, we've seen it a lot of places. They put in a base network to do certain things, and they start leveraging the heck out of the asset. And I can't believe what some of our utilities have been able to do, which was with a network that was designed to do consumption, so we wouldn't have to have a meter reader there. I did the business case initially with PICO way back in the early 90s, or was involved with it. They don't want to hear anything about any of this other happy stuff. It was just reduce cost and direct meter reading costs. And what they have done with that system since is really fantastic. But there will be, even though we're penetrated pretty well in the state, AMI-wise, to be able to do some of the functions that I listed on the other, the last one, the third one, there'll probably have to be some more investment. So my message to you is you need to think about that and what it'll do for the consumer, what it'll do for the utility. Otherwise, they're going to have to make choices as to whether they do things or not. What I'm doing with some utilities and doing with PICO and some others is let's get the DA people on board and let's make a joint investment on this and then build a value. But at any rate, I am very passionate about AMI. I think it's going to take us way into the future, and there's applications we don't even know about right now that are going to be able to allow us to do all sorts of nice things for the ratepayers and for the utilities as well. So that's my message. Sorry about the awkwardness here.
Thank you, Jeremy. What I'd like to suggest, are all four of you going to be joining us for lunch?
Yes.
You can't. Okay, three of you are. If you can maybe have an opportunity to speak with any of the panelists if you have questions. I would like to keep this on track, especially because we have an 11:30 telephonic presentation from the California Commission. I don't want to hold them up in getting to that. So let's go ahead and take a break. Try to catch the presenters if you have any specific questions you want to talk to them about, either in the break or at lunch if they're still here. And please come back at 11 for Michael Oldak from Edison Electric Institute. Thanks.